I think we were going to talk about, we decided off there, we were going to talk about trauma and the hidden nature of trauma. And I'm presuming as a counsellor, you're more likely to see it in an individual than the rest of us are.
Yeah.
And someone who's, you've talked about a lot about your own trauma that you've faced as a young person, and that probably helps you identify as well, fellow travellers, if we put it that way.
Yeah, well, you're talking about trauma in our younger years and how that may look, or how do we recognise trauma in a child or somebody who's growing up, a young person, and often it's not so easy to be seen. Like, kids are really resilient, Aaron, and I think that trauma can happen, and they can cover things up, or they don't hold on to it quite the way a teenager would or an adult. So depending really on how the effect on the trauma on the child, on whether it's shut them down or not, a child can actually hide trauma quite well, can put on a face where people would not think that something was wrong, and you'd have to be quite astute, I think, to be able to recognise.
Kids do learn pretty early on the benefit of putting on a face around adults. That a lot of adults are expecting a certain thing, and kids learn to provide it anyway, regardless of trauma.
Well, it's survival mode, and you've got to realise that when a child's been through, and I'm talking about trauma that trauma that is either abusive or sexual trauma.
Serious trauma.
Yes,
capital T
there
trauma.
We go.
Yeah.
Serious trauma. Yeah, so you got to realise a child does not understand trauma like an adult would. So they're not processing like an adult that something bad has happened to me. Somebody, this is wrong.
Yeah.
I should tell somebody. This person needs to be held accountable. They're not thinking like that. Mm. They're just thinking they will get a feeling that it's wrong.
But they might get told something else in the process,
right?
They
be verbalised something else
if it's in like an abuser or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. And so, what happens to the child? Their feelings and their thinking don't line up as they start to grow up. Their feelings can be out of sync because they've never been able to trust what they're feeling because they get told what they're feeling isn't right, you know, when somebody's trying to cover up what they're doing. So the messages going into a child are very confusing. But again, the child does not have the adult's brain, so is not being logical about this and working it all out. They are just experiencing what is happening and then trying to put it in its place as best they can with the knowledge they have. So in different circumstances, that's going to look very different for every child. In some families, abuse is known and so is hidden. And the child knows, the family knows, and so that's even more confusing. In other families, abuse is happening and the family doesn't know, and the child is trying to protect the family from that knowledge because they're not sure what's going to happen if that knowledge was to come out. You know, so there's so many dynamics happening around abuse and trauma for a young person that's not the same as we would deal with it as an adult, because they're dealing with it from a very different perspective. And
well, how do you deal with it as a counsellor? Like, most people have a sense, even if they've never been to a counsellor, that you go along and you talk about things and get some perspective on it, and the counsellor might explain a little bit about the science and the understanding, the psychology and all that, but there's a lot of talk going on and rationalized talk. But with a child, you're talking about, they're just experiencing it, they're not rationalizing it or conceptualizing it, or any of those big words.
That conceptualizing is kind of, well, they may get a feeling, there will be a feeling attached to that, and that feeling,
but you must be working in a different way.
Well, yes, because you're not, the language is different. Children don't have a sense of the language that we would, or being able to express something the way that we can as an adult. So their expression of what's going on for them could come out, they could act it out. So kids can become bullies.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean every bully has, you know, don't use that as something's wrong with the child, because sometimes kids are just that way. But it can come out that way. It can come out as being introverted and withdrawn. It can come out as hurting other animals. You know, animals, they may be like that,
yeah.
Or it could, you may not see it at all. This could be one happy little child who just doesn't seem, you know, even though you can't put your finger on it, just doesn't seem right, but, you know, you can't quite get what it is. Yeah, kids are very resilient. They're in the moment, so if they're happy, they're happy. If they're sad, they're sad.
But if you have a child is brought to you because it's become acknowledged by the adults in their life that the abuse has been happening.
Yeah.
And you want to help the child overcome it. If they're the child that's putting on the appearance that there's nothing is wrong at all, can you actually do much?
Well, that's a really big question, actually. Because given the scenario you're presenting, the child is being brought in. So a child's not going to just open up to somebody and let them know what's going on in their life. Even if they may not even have the language to express it. So the therapist, it's about working with the child at their level and from their perspective. So coming down to very much a child level. So drawing is great.
Yeah.
Kids will draw things out and express in ways because it's their imagination, so it's not a language as such. And so they can get carried away in their imagination and really express some wonderful things in drawing or sand tray. You know, you've heard of sand tray where they will get figurines and that's amazing work. Some people may use rhyme, poetry. Poetry's amazing for kids who have been traumatised.
Okay,
rhyming.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it's actually for me growing up, that was something I did really, really well. You know, you could have given me anything and I could have made a poem out of it, a rhyming poem.
Right.
It just was very natural for me, and I think that's got to do with being able to get into your imagination very easily, and that some people would call it dissociating, you know, moving into another part of you.
So dissociating, that is a term that therapists use for people who are coping with their trauma, but you wouldn't call all poetry writing is not necessarily dissociation.
You can't lumber that.
Yeah.
But there is it's almost a safe place where you can, words and rhyme, it's almost musical, so it's very creative, and you can get lost in that. So kids can be very good at that. That doesn't mean that they've been traumatised.
No.
It could be that they are gifted in that area. But for some children, yeah, so it's never an easy one to spot.
It's a way to express, though.
Yes.
I mean, that's probably healthy. Yeah, it's healthy for them to be doing
poems. Yeah, well, it's rhythm and it's rhyme and it's a calming process for the whole nervous system even. It's very calming. It's very nice. That being able to express themselves through music, movement.
I'm sort of thinking like that, like as kids, I didn't have any capital T trauma in my life, but I knew not, I felt like there were lots of things I shouldn't be sharing with adults for whatever reason. And so all kids are going to, well, a lot of kids are going to feel like that, and probably especially ones who've been traumatised. So, but this bypasses all that. Like they'll have, it's like there's a filter in our brains to say some things and not say other things. And I guess these kind of creative things bypass that.
That's right.
And enable that stuff that's inside to be expressed, but without setting off danger signals for the adults around
them. Having to verbalise in a language something that they may not be able to verbalise either, like even put a language to it. So you've got to realise in the adult's world we know exactly what trauma. You know, we can put a language to that trauma and we can express it and we can put a story to it. But a child who is experiencing that trauma can't can't do that, can't put the story together, because they're only getting a snippet, a little bit of that story, and so they can't see the bigger picture, and they don't know how to express that because they haven't lived the life yet of an adult. So
I'm just thinking about how obsessed we are in our culture with STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, I don't know what it is, M is, doesn't matter. It's like all these scientific things are very important. Get your kids into science. Our culture needs science, but and arts and things are kind of been always the forgotten about stuff.
Mm.
But as we don't do anything, we don't learn how to operate ourselves as human beings so much at school. And just having art classes where kids are free to do art should be part, it should be in there, really, I feel, based on what you've just told me.
Oh, absolutely.
Although kids can draw at home. I mean, there's no reason why they can't draw at home, but I think by not prioritising arts in our schools, we're telling kids that it's not important, and at some point they're going to stop doing that. The sooner the better, because then they'll be becoming the people that everyone around them expects them to be.
Well, art is a way of is a form of feeling too. It's not always a thinking process. It's more of, you know, I feel like I want to do this, or this is the way I want to go, or may not have any logical processing to it. So therefore, yes, you're right. Art, music, movement can bypass our logical self, our thinking brain, and get more into what the impact of something. And so impact of a trauma might come out as a colour, you know, simply splashing colour on a piece of paper and expressing in that way. And for somebody else, that might seem really silly, but it's not to me, because I know that trauma is an energy and it has to come out somewhere. So if a child is holding in trauma, then somewhere that is getting expressed, and probably not in a very good way, and not in a way where the child is being received well either, so they could become, you know,
they get in trouble for it.
In trouble all the time.
Which is kind of, keeps,
you know,
I guess
might
that keeps
needling people.
That probably keeps the trauma in then, or it creates new trauma. Either way, you're not really getting very far.
Well, it's, you know, trauma needs to be released. It's something we have to work through. We can't, if we can, hold on to it, but it's going to cause us grief.
so you've got a child in, and you're getting them to draw stuff, and you can see. I mean, especially if you know if they've been brought to you because they've experienced trauma recently, you'll see pretty clearly in their drawings. But where do you go from there? Do they talk about it? Do you ever get into that? Where do you go from there?
Yeah, so...
I mean, you can't just draw a few pictures and they're good to go. Like,
there's the Band-Aid, off you go.
Yeah, I know, right? It must be more to it is what I'm thinking.
Well, I think there's a lifetime to it, and depending on how that trauma is... The trauma is always going to be there. You can't take it away once it's there. It's more about how that is processed and how we integrate that into our life. Is my story, is my narrative going to take me out, or am I going to get stronger from it? And as we get older, we make those choices. Do I get stronger from my story, or is my story defining me and that's who I am? And so when we get older, we start to make choices. But when we're younger, it's more about how people are speaking into us. So, you know, people who will believe in you, people who have you, you know, have your back 100% and trust, you know, believe you. That's going to be the most important thing for a child, is that safety net of the family and the love that, or the people that love them.
What can you do as a counsellor? They've drawn a picture.
Mm.
Do you talk to them?
So, you know, I might ask them, simple question, oh, tell me about your picture. Well, what does this mean? Or what's this person doing? Or, oh, your balloon's sitting over there. Why is he over there? The balloon's over there. You know, it might just point things out. You might just be curious and interested about their picture, or why they, you know, they might have drawn in a lot of black or a lot of fiery red. Oh, that's a strong colour, or that's a powerful colour, and... what do you know about that colour? Or how does it make you feel, that colour? You know, there might be ways that you can unpack something for a child that has nothing to do with the trauma, because you don't want to re-traumatise somebody, but you do want to allow an outlet for that. So, you know, I feel sad when I draw a lot of black. Oh, that's a difficult place. You know, it's more about acknowledging, because you can't fix this stuff, Aaron. You can't, you know, you can't say to a child, what happened to you was absolutely terrible, and that person's going to, this is what's going to happen to
them. But you must do a little bit of that, creating a new narrative, like that was a person, a bad person did a bad thing, you know, I don't, simple language. So that, because like we've talked before about abusers will justify their actions and create their own story about why it's happening, and the blame is on the child, perhaps. And so you must want to at least give them a new narrative that the bad thing had happened to them and it's not their fault.
So the new narrative comes especially more so from the family.
Yeah.
Because I'm not in that child's life, so me saying one thing isn't going to that environment better.
Yeah.
Or give false hope.
So you've got to counsel the family.
Yeah. Definitely can't just, you know, you want to work with the family.
Do you ever counsel a child by themselves, or is it preferable to counsel the family as well as the child, alongside the child?
So when I worked at Parentline, I'd always contact with the family or with the caregiver, because the child may not be with the family. And so there is where your communication, there is where your download goes, you know, of what you've noticed, what you've seen, what you feel may be sitting there for the child, but certainly nothing I would go through with the child. That would be more confusing for them.
Yeah.
More so, I want to provide a space that they can say, draw, do whatever they want. I mean, you do dress up. At Parentline, we used to have dress ups, so it was incredible. Some of the different things that they might want to dress up in, or have a sword, or to be the hero in the story. See, trauma can look like that. A child who wants to be the hero.
Yeah.
You know, because they've been so made the victim, or made the person who's the lesser than, that they want to be the one who saves the day. So let them be the hero. So we want to build into their strengths, and make the strengths bigger than the picture that they may have come in with. So look at their strengths, strength-based practice.
Yeah, you've used that phrase before. Yeah.
Always look at a child's strengths. Always. You cannot over-encourage a child. You just can't. Okay? You're not going to give them the big head. That's not true. You cannot. You know, there's nothing. It's wonderful to see your child beam with excitement about who they are or what they know.
Yeah.
That's exciting. You can have kids that have been through extreme trauma, but in the right environment and with the right input and the right support around them, they're going to grow. They'll bloom. They'll still bloom. And they can come through this. It's when it's hidden, not seen, not known, and the child is forever having to, under the surface, hide the trauma that was sitting there. So in an environment where everyone's happy, the child needs to act out the happiness. Otherwise, people are going to notice, aren't they? So they learn to adjust who they are to fit the environment. That's the sad part of this story, is that we lose the individual now, and they are becoming what is needed to look right. Yeah, so that's where the real trauma is.
Right.
Is in the covering up, the unknown, the not seen. Better to be known and seen, and then we can get the support and move through it in a healthy way. But
and I guess the earlier,
mostly unseen.
The earlier the better.
Earlier the better,
but,
absolutely.
But you'll be working with lots of people who only got the chance to deal with it as an adult.
Yeah.
For sure, and so you've still got solutions, well, not solutions for them. That sounds like an engineering problem.
Does it?
But you know, you've still got constructive things
unpack.
That you can do. Yeah,
yeah, we can unpack. We can look at. We can be informed, and we can have strategies, and I think awareness around what's happening for us. The more awareness we have, the more informed we are, the more we are able to support our own system through this. as an adult, yeah, as a child, that's not possible without an adult around. So we need the healthy adults to be able to support the children through. If you've got broken adults with broken children, you know, it becomes generational then. It just keeps going on and on. And
I know. That feels hard.
Well, it is, and really hard.
And that speaks about our culture, where people are isolated so much in their nuclear families. If they're lucky, they're in a nuclear family, possibly a solo parent. And the lack of, the feeling that we shouldn't ask for help, but the lack of support, whānau support or community support or something, or having an elder around, not necessarily elder is good, but also just an older person with some life experience and a bit of mental space or time on their hands.
Amen.
Like,
you know,
people
I think you've probably pretty much given us, and I, you know, if I think about what you just said, how many of our older generation could we be using to support our younger generation? Man, some of our older people could speak wealth of wisdom and encouragement into our younger people, because they have lived the life and they know the hard times and the bad times and the good times, and they, if anyone, can and have the time to be able to actually give something back to to this younger generation.
Mm. I mean, that's what, I mean, I guess I've described the job description of a grandparent. But also something's happened with our attitudes to our older people. Life changes. Life is of changing so much. Well, technology's changing, and culture that's changing with it so fast now that older generations find it hard to communicate with younger generations. But that's what they say.
Yeah, but that's interesting.
That's what they say.
Yeah,
but
I just want to pause you there.
All the relationship stuff is still. Our relationships are still relationships. That hasn't changed. There's no new technology.
So what are we believing?
Well,
because we've got to be careful what we're believing here, because I've talked about this before. We move away from our humanness and we start believing things that actually aren't the truth.
I know, and I'm trying to like zero in on that there, because it is true that the world, you know, technology changes fast, and an older person doesn't understand what Snapchat is, and why would they want to?
And who cares?
You know, yeah, and who cares? But just human relationships, we forget that's our technology.
That's great.
As human beings, and that's
what we need to develop.
and that doesn't change. So there must be a way for older people to talk to younger people, to find a connection.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to revolve around. I mean, it's nice to have things in common, but I don't know the way. I don't know what it is.
And I don't either. But I think sometimes even just sitting with an older person can be calming. That feeling of the grandparent, that feeling of the older person, the wise person, or the one who's lived life. I do think that our older generation needs to be held in higher regard than we do. I'll say that again. I do believe our older generation needs to be held in higher regard than we hold them in.
This is true, but it goes both ways. The older generation needs to have more respect for the younger generations, as in not that scathing young people today.
Yeah,
they're you know, this generation coming through. It's not something I believe, but it's something I hear.
And every generation hears that. We hear that message. That message came through when I was growing up.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you know, your generation. It's like, we didn't seem to resonate with our older people, right? But I think our older people too, they had a lot of trauma. They came through the depression.
But it's also not all the older generation, right?
No.
It's not. That's the thing. Like when you're young, you hear that message, but it's not everyone.
No.
And it's the people expressing their own trauma, like you're kind of maybe alluding to there. Maybe I read into that. But I think it's a reflection on the older person if they're criticizing the younger generation. Mm. For starters, who created the environment that the young people are growing up in, which is shaping them, right? So yeah, there's a bit of an abandonment of responsibility there. But anyway, I want to go back where we were, though. We need to value our older people more, and our older people need to value our young. We all need to value each other more.
Well,
I guess is where I'm going.
Yeah, I would start with valuing our older people. Truly, I would, because I think we haven't for so long. That and we've gotten a wrong picture.
Do you say this because you're becoming older,
Marie?
Oh. Marie's just like shrunk, visibly shrunk when I said that.
No, I don't, because I'm not there yet, because I'm talking like 80s. That's what I think older now.
There's always someone older, isn't
there's
there?
Always somebody older.
But you make it sound like you're in your 70s, which I know you're not.
No, I'm not.
No, that's right.
Not even close. So there we go. yeah, okay. So, but I think that we've drawn a picture there around our older generation that maybe not be so healthy as a separation, like, oh, they don't get our young people, they're not on the same.
Maybe
but,
we need
but
to not...
But love is love, Aaron.
Yeah.
Our human response, our humanness does not change. And so just coming alongside somebody who's younger and just encouraging them, seeing their strengths, you know, it's got nothing to do with the internet and Snapchat and all of that and what they don't know. It's got everything to do with human connectedness and being just being with somebody, another human being who sees something good in you.
Well, we probably need to stop talking about in terms of generations too, because there's people of all stripes in all generations.
Absolutely.
And everyone knows some older people that they just feel good to be around, and they know the ones that they want to avoid as well.
So what I'd like to say is, and I don't know what the answer is, but maybe somebody out there does, and that's your job to figure out what the answer is. Like, how do we align these two? How do we bring our older generation more in line with so that these support systems can happen, so that these, you know, we used to have the grandparent like a buddy, you know, system, and there used to be that kind of one. I remember way back you could kind of, there was something where it was like you could be a grandparent, almost be adopted into a family as a grandparent. Maybe some of that sort of stuff needs to resurface and be revamped.
It's hard. I think for younger people to be aware that there are people, you might have had rough experiences with older people in your life, just being told off, and things that feel that sense of injustice that you were told off for something that you weren't actually doing and all that kind of stuff. But there are, I guess, to keep in mind that there are older people out there who are going to be really beneficial to have in your life, and keep an eye out for them.
Yes,
because they might feel like they're few and far between, but they are around, and if you've got your eyes open, you might find these people.
Yeah, and I tell you what, in society we have made this very, very difficult. And because we are trying to protect also the safety of our children, but in that we've also closed the doors on relationship. So where's our wisdom as a parent, as family members, you know, as we bring somebody into our family, you know, bring somebody that's not our family into our family? You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out if somebody is worthy to be in your family. You know?
I guess you need, it feels like if you said to someone, okay, today we're going to, or next week we're going to bring in an older person to meet with your family and become part of the family, people would freak out and go, no, I don't want that. You know,
I wouldn't
do it that way. But there needs to be places for people to just meet each other and come across each other and interact in our community.
Well, you know, that happens at the library. You know, you can have older people who will read to our young kids. Might even be somebody who wants to dress up downtown and read to our young kids. But would people be offended by that? It's like, you know,
it's okay.
a difficult one.
It's okay in the library.
It's okay in the library.
It's fine. You see that happening in the library? It's all good. You see that happening outside the library? People are worried. Yeah. And so, yeah, you've got to pick and choose your moments.
Yeah. So this isn't, I'm not going to wrap my head around this one, but for somebody who's keen on wrapping their head around it, I think it would be great if we could have more alignment there, where some of that wisdom and relationship and warmth.
I think this stuff is way easier in the Māori community. Not that I'm immersed in the Māori community, but the concepts of the auntie and nanny.
Yes, koro and...
Yeah, all that.
Nana and the nannies. I'm going to go and see the nannies, and you know the nannies are going to back you.
Yeah, that's right.
I grew up around all that, and there is a great safety in it.
They'll tell you off, but they'll also back you.
Will.
Yeah, yeah.
but they'll also protect you fiercely, and they will stand for you. So
and I think
yes,
there's an expectation too for the older Māori people that they will come to fill that role.
Yes.
Whereas I don't feel like there's that expectation for me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to be a nanny anyway, am I? But, like, you know what I mean?
You'd be a kuru. Yeah. But you're right. I think the Māori culture certainly has it far better. And same with the Chinese and Asian. And, you know, the older cultures too look after the old people.
I'm sure ours did at one point. But we've had the, I don't know, all I know about is the baby boomer generation, the youth revolution. And the encouragement of the baby boomer generation to stay young and keep following, doing what they want to do.
Yeah, and then we got old
which I don't object to, but that's a different story than you become a support person for your community, I guess.
Yeah, well, a lot of our older people, you know, just because they're older does not mean they've lost their ability to have a strong voice or have wisdom or knowledge about some things that they may know that could help us. You know, we don't want to lose our wise people, and it would be great to see if we stop seeing them as maybe weak and vulnerable all the time, but also a resource and a strength for us that we haven't really even tapped into yet. And their ability to come alongside our younger people and support and encourage and see greatness that often we miss. Mm. So that would be my encouragement. I don't know how to make that work or how that looks in our society, because we seem so separated from our old people.
And that's the thing. And I think a lot of grandparents are like, it's really good to see the grandkids, but they get dumped on me for a few hours and I'm exhausted by the end of it.
Yeah.
Because we don't live in a more communal society.
There we go.
We've
got a lot of old people here. You're right. And that's the story. Some grandparents are exhausted because they can't do all of this. And we've got other older people who aren't grandparents but certainly fit that mould, that have nobody to care for.
Yeah, if you lived in a village situation, the kids would be running around playing, and they would, as an older person, they'd just come and talk to you when they wanted to, and then they'd go again. Yep. But when they get delivered to your house, you're the entertainment for 4 hours.
Yes. So maybe it's about communal areas, just like we opened up communal areas down here. Maybe we need to be using them more and be more available. I don't know the answers, Aaron. I have no idea. But for me, it's always about connection. It's always about our humanness and how well are we doing that, because we will have less mind health issues if we were taking care of our relationships with each other.
There's that Johan Hari book, Lost Connections.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's written a new book.
Has he?
Called Stolen Focus.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to look that one up.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. I got it as soon as I discovered it. It was out and I
have
read it.
Have you brought it?
It's good. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
it's
we'll
good.
Talk about it off here.
And it's I will. It takes a lot to explain.
I need to read it.
I've lost my brain connection now.
That's okay.
I want to say it's about social media and overwhelming us with information and
that's
how
social media is always
stealing our focus. But it's way more than that. It's not just social media that we're talking about. But it's new. He's onto something that's very new that we're all struggling with may not even be aware of it. But we all feel overwhelmed by the information basically that's in our faces all the time, and that we keep getting all these notifications, keep shifting us to different tasks and things. And since I read the book, I'm like, okay, if I'm working on something, I'm going to resist the urge to check that little notification that popped up and all that stuff. I'm just going to stay focused for as long as I can on one thing. So that's one little thing that I took away from. It was way, 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 way more than that, and I'm going to talk about it on the show more often. But
I need to read the book so we can talk about it.
Yeah. All righty. Hey, folks, we'll be talking to Maria, our local councillor therapist. First chat for the year. Good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's a beautiful day outside. Most of the roads are open, but things still aren't perfect, so take it easy out there, especially take it easy if you're going Waitatuna Valley Road. I keep hearing about people driving too fast. They don't know how to drive on the gravel. So, yeah, just go easy, everybody. We'll get there. Yeah. All right, I'll be back again tomorrow morning. See you then.